Hello and welcome to episode 43 of the Freo Big Footy podcast. Plenty to cover this week with Freo's terrific win last week over Hawthorn after being 0-6 the last six times. But however, they did have most of those in Melbourne. And obviously plenty to talk about today with the re-signing of Morabito and the other important news, which obviously our main man over in Victoria will be sort of a bit devastated about. Seppo, how are you, mate? Do you want to let the listeners in and give us your thoughts on it?
Oh, well, there is big news today. It's not Fife's appeal. It's the disheartening news of Kepler Bradley retiring, which I'm gutted. It's I took the news pretty hard today at work when the tweets came through, and heart sank a bit that one of our favourites, our cult hero, our figure, one of my favourites since I've been following Freo, the enigmatic number 26, is hanging up the boots at the end of the season. And the thing that gets me is we probably won't get a chance to see him play again. It looks like he's, from the video they put up on the website, that he's going to play out his last two games for Peel and then sit back and watch finals. So it's a real shame, but I'm going to represent him well. And it was great to see that he made mention of the fans and the support he's got in his video. I'll be going up there with my Kepler Bradley banner up to Brisbane this weekend, and hopefully I'll get a run for the TV. But it's a sad time, and it's one of our great, well, it probably means more for the fans that we're losing someone like Kepler.
Yeah, just as a bit of a curveball there, Seppo, do you think if Port Adelaide lose to Carlton on Friday night and we beat Brisbane where there's no opportunity, maybe they'll rest one of our key forwards in for the last game and
Oh, it'd be nice and sentimental. And I think Ross has said in the past he's not the one for sentimental selections, especially with Morabito getting games. But maybe that is the opportunity when there's nothing at stake and a chance to rest. That would be ideal. But obviously, it requires obviously him getting through fitness-wise. And that's one thing he did say, that he struggled to get up from his last game for Peel. So, and it's an odd person you'd probably want to have coming on as a sub, maybe, if he did get a game in that last round, but it's highly unlikely. I think it's probably going to be a very limited opportunity for him to come in. You never know, we could be going to finals and be dissipated with injuries, and we might need to call upon him. So obviously he's not going to tuck straight into the beer and the fast food and keep himself available, because it looks like he's staying on the list right to the very end. So you never know.
Yeah, it'd be probably a bit worried if Kepler did the old Jakey King and went down to the cheer squad and started sculling a couple of beers. And, you know, he struggles a bit sometimes to hold his footing on the Subiaco Oval surface, let alone after having a couple down at the sort of Drogmire of Subiaco Oval. But
no doubt if he did try to do that, he'd be stumbling and tripping and doing backflips all the way down the stairs if he did try to get down there amongst the fans. But that's our Kepler. And, I'm looking forward to at least seeing a couple more tributes posted to our board this week for him.
Absolutely, and still my favourite moment that you posted earlier on Twitter today, Seppo, with the little shimmy round Judd in 2008, I think it was, and slotting it straight through at Eddie Head Stadium. And, I think it was one of those classic moments of Kepler that you sort of see the best and worst in a very short period of time.
Yeah, sure. And other than that, the sidestep around Jubb, I think the other one is the his falling over after kicking goals. I think it's happened on more than one occasion, but it's one that when I think of Mr. Bradley, that's what comes to mind about kicking the impossible goal and falling over in the process.
Yeah, absolutely. And still managed to get a pretty long career out of himself, considering there was sort of all those elements of doubt, particularly when he was at Essendon playing as a key back. So, but it'll be interesting to see who takes on the enigmatic number 26 jersey as well, jumper number, with after Clive and now Kepler having it. It's a certainly need a bit of an excitement machine on it, that's for sure.
Mm. And whoever we do draft or move around and get into that has to be obviously more recognised from their first name, as both Clive and Kepler. Obviously, you talk about Waterhouse and Bradley, and they're like, who? It's all about Kepler and Clive. So hopefully whoever steps into number 26 does have a very recognisable first name.
Yeah, we haven't had really sort of anyone since then. Like, any of the new guys coming through all sort of tend to be using their last name. We don't have anyone by that sort of first name basis, so it'd be interesting to see who if anyone does take that on.
Mm.
All right, obviously the other big news today, you did touch on it briefly earlier, Seppo, was the Fife appeal and tribunal earlier in the week for 2 weeks. What were your thoughts on A, the suspension, and B, the tribunal and appeal?
Well, I think the whole disappointing thing about all this is not Fife's actual action, but the way it was adjudicated, and it's more about the law and the process and wording that is frustrating in all this, and it just sort of screams and points to a system overhaul, that we can let these things and technicalities be adjudicated on by a single person that says, no, we cannot look at this incident that Fife called the armbar or shepherd or whatever it was that copped Lewis high, and yet he played out the game and got 44 touches and no real impact. It's almost like a reckless action or something untoward that Fife didn't really mean to go out and intentionally strike him, that I'll just be interested to actually, if I had the time, I'd sit down there and watch every game and try and highlight similar incidents and point out how inconsistent these rulings are, and there's no bending of the law, and it frustrates me to that degree. And I knew sort of going into this appeal that we did try and go around the way they adjudicated the first time round, but I suppose you're not going to win with the way they're setting out these laws and tribunal hearings. It's quite frustrating, at least. But it's a shame for Fife, because that means he's sitting on, I think, 75 or 76 points, and that's going to go into next year. It doesn't get wiped, I believe, and makes his Brownlow chances even harder next year as well, not only this year.
Yeah, I think, probably having a bit of, if you wanted to do a bit of the conspiracy theory, if you only had the, if you only got the 1 week, which I think most people thought was 1 week would have been a fair suspension, then at least you get rid of all the Brownlow talk coming up in the next few weeks and doing all that sort of stuff. I think the frustrating thing for me was, as I said, I thought it was probably worthy of a week, to be fair. It was a silly, reckless... It was a reckless act. There was no need for it to happen, but...
And there's no way that you would want that to go unpunished. It's almost like everyone would be happy with a week for what it's done. It's just two, and the way they're calling it intentional is the ridiculous bit.
Well, I mean, the problem... I mean, there's a twofold effect here. One of them was the fact that, that the games were compounded by the fact that it was a... pretty poor. It was a crap decision earlier in the year with the bump. So he got this extra loading because of that decision. And even the one last year, if you remember, Seppo, where he got suspended for that stupid little kick thing on Daniel Jackson. And yet, this year you see like Jono having a bit of a crack on the, on Lachie Neale, and it seems to just, insufficient force now all of a sudden. But the other thing that was probably frustrating for me was the actual Fremantle tribunal process itself. I think it was a QC they had in there. I can't remember which one it was, but the problem was they didn't know the rules properly. I mean, you can't go into the tribunal arguing two things. You can argue that it was intentional and reckless, or high, or to the body, but you can't argue both. So they went in there with a sort of, I suppose the word, they were sort of destined. They lost before they even started. And the other problem was as well that in the tribunal hearing on Tuesday, Fife actually came out with the words, well, I intentionally meant to strike him, but I intentionally meant to strike him on the shoulder or in the body, not on the head. But the problem is, if you look at the tribunal rules, any contact made with the body that makes contact with the head is deemed head-high contact or high contact. So they couldn't win that one. And then because he's come out with the words, I intentionally meant to strike him, that automatically takes out of the reckless argument because you're automatically going intentional. So I think it was just really poorly handled by the football club, and I think it's one area, and I sort of tweeted out that I think the club needs to spend, instead of spending the $15,000 on an appeal, is actually going back through and learning the tribunal handbook a little bit better, because it was just looking incompetent, to be honest, out there, and I think didn't do Fife any favours whatsoever. But anyway, the upside is that he did have a bit of a knock on his shoulder last week and all the week before, and he gets 2 weeks to get himself fit and firing for finals with no chance of any injuries or anything. So if we've got to look at the sort of silver lining, I suppose that's got to be it, but it's going to make it definitely hard for the next couple of weeks, that's for sure, without him out there.
An interesting thing with hypotheticals, if you did say that we had the preparation and had a stronger argument, if we did go in there and argue one point, would have they still bent over and downgraded it or accepted the alternate penalty handed down? It's just funny to think how their mindsets or what, you know, conspiracy theories might be happening behind the scene in terms of what they decided to, you know, adjudicate the decision with. That if we did have a stronger argument, would have they thrown it out? Would have they downgraded it? What would have actually happened? But so it's all in the past now, and he's got to have his 2 weeks off and hopefully come fit and firing. And possibly, if things go their way, we'll be looking at an away Sydney final. But let's move on to the great win we had against the Hawks.
Yeah. I think, Seppo, that was probably our, well, clearly our best performance, and certainly our best performance by our top line A-graders. I don't think we've had a game this year where really all of our A-graders have tended to fire at the same time or be close to being on the same park, but I think it was definitely as close as we've had since probably the finals last year. And even probably more pleasing was that it was great to see Mundy back to his best form, especially out in the middle in that third quarter. He was just absolutely sensational, and probably gave reminiscence of the grand final last year where he kept us in it, but he just stood forward. And but all our top players really played well last week. Pav got 5, Hill, just, you know, it was just a terrific team performance. What did you think watching it, obviously, over there?
Well, it was a great intensity, and the build-up was pretty big in Melbourne, and it was almost just flagged on the fixture as game of the round, and it started off that way, and it felt like a four-quarter performance from us. But the fact that Hawthorn was in front for most of the first half sort of doesn't state that, but it felt like it's the best we've played since, you know, round one against Collingwood, where we absolutely dominated them, but it didn't have that obviously same scoreline and effect. But we were just happy with, even though that Hawthorn were peppering our goal in that first, you know, they were a bit wasteful, kicking, I think, 4-7 in the first quarter. But I think Pav's dominance and the way that he almost stood up, and I made a joke about it, that he played Ballantyne's role and did those sort of running snap goals, and was almost letting the other guys like Walters and Crozier and Tabernard all sort of shine in their roles. And he sort of took the almost that second, you know, not the backlight, because he kicked, you know, 5 goals, but it's just the way he played. And he actually led our inside 50s for that game. It's funny just to see, you know, how and where he played and what he did for the team, not just kick the goals and have a general Pav-like full forward game. It was an interesting one, but it just shows, like you said, with all those A-graders fit and firing, I think the thing that I love the most is just having Walters back. You can just see what it does to the team, and the way he moves and delivers the ball. He can be damaging like Hill with a handful of touches. He doesn't need to rack up a heap. He's just that good, and that excited me the most.
Yeah, absolutely. And, terrific to see him get through the game. And as you said, he only had like 12 touches, but it, like 6 of those were involved score involvements, and I think he had 4 direct goal assists. So, I mean, that just shows you. And, I mean, he's only going to get better as he plays more as well. And obviously, we'll get to the ins a little bit later, but having him and Ballantyne back in the side will certainly be good. But I think for me, the highlight, apart from obviously our A-graders getting back, was the performance of probably 2 of our younger guys. And I thought Matt Tabernard had a terrific second half in particular, and I thought he was reasonable all game. But in the second half in particular, just the way he led up, he looked confident. He took one cut, you know, took a grab, kicked a goal. But he just gave us an option, and the boys were leading, like, you know, honouring it, and he managed to sort of keep it out in front of him if he didn't take the mark or kept the ball moving in our direction. I thought he was terrific. And I thought Crozier once again played another great game, even though he didn't hit the scoreboard quite as much. The job he did, particularly on Birchall in the first half, keeping him quiet and limiting his run from half back, I thought was terrific. And he certainly adds you a little bit more forward potency than probably what De Boer does, even though he does this. I mean, De Boer's probably that little bit harder, but I think Crozier certainly gives you that bit more X factor out forward. And if he manages to continue to keep those guys quiet up, like those halfbacks, I think he's going to cement himself in the 22, by especially come finals time as well.
I suppose the thing, Crozier only got to do that and got subbed off. Up until half time, I thought it might have been Tabernard that was heading that way, but after half time, he really stood up and you know, didn't drop his head and played a good second half. And when talking about those young kids, the other one that's been there all year that's done a great job is Sutcliffe, who picked up 20 disposals himself, did a heap of work on the rebound and set up one of those beautiful end-to-end goals, I think, that Frio's put up on their website. I think there was a passage of play that involved Walters and 5 twice and Hilly, and I think Sutcliffe was involved in one of them, and it's just showing that he's really stepping up and having that more of a joining that senior group down back with, you know, Spur and Duffield and taking in some of those kicking in duties and being really effective. Like he was operating at 80% and didn't have too many bad kicks, and he's showing he's got some real weapons. So glad to see that that's, you know, one of our strengths down in the back line now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, talking about Sutcliffe, I think, you know, even though I think Crozier was another one who just had a couple of beautiful handballs that just opened it up for us, and, you know, just that little touch of vision, you know, being a little bit wider, I think was terrific to see. And I thought our, you know, quite a lot of even our mainstays, I thought Dawson was very good again down back. And, you know, it was good to see Mzungu back out there as well, Seppo. You know, I think he's a very underrated player by a lot of, not only our supporters, but particularly by the AFL, and he's just his ability to run all day and do a job, and he uses the ball reasonably well, is just can't be understated enough for our side, really.
I love the fact that Bob Murphy actually put Mzungu in his All-Australian, I think, at halfway through the year, and just sets, you know, he's a really hard top to play on, and he just offers so much with his run, and that sort of showed that how quick you've got to move against Hawthorn. You've got to be switching on and moving the ball quickly, and he was part of that. He didn't sort of stand out too much and did great Mzungu stuff, but he was there amongst it. It's just like you're saying, just ticking the box to say he got through unscathed and came straight back into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Silvani once again came into the side and did his job as pretty well. I mean, probably for me the only two real concerns is I think Jono's form still not terrific. Even though he was very good in the third quarter, just his ball use, Seppo, just isn't quite as good as it was particularly last year. He just has those few grubber kicks or he tries to do the worm burner type thing. And I know Clancy Pearce used to try and do it a little bit as well. And like they started to learn to weight their passes a bit more, but he just seems to just do some silly turnovers with just...
He's also hesitating quite a bit, and there's times where you almost see him streaming out or rebounding out of the 50 and you expect him to do the old sell the candy and go around someone or just something off, and he just took that extra couple of seconds and didn't dish it off or went for the handball instead of one of his beautiful kicks forward. And I don't know if it was, couldn't see the downfield vision, if there was just nothing up there, but he didn't seem right. And I don't know if he's, even just in the warm-up, I noticed before the game, I'm like, he's limping around and he's not moving. So hopefully whatever it is, if he is carrying something, that he gets over it pretty quickly, because I suppose now with how many we've got out, McFarlane already out, and, you know, we don't want to lose someone like Johnson again. So hopefully it's not something that flares up or he tries to push himself through it, because obviously he might put his hand up and say it's available and I can play. But when he's operating at, you know, 80, 85% and he's fluffing the odd kick, let's just hope it doesn't cost us when it gets serious. But moving on to one of the other performances that probably goes a bit unsung again was the work that Crowley did on Isaac Smith. I think, did he take the tag? It was different selection. He probably had a bit of time on Mitchell as well, but it was just great to see they've actually shut down someone that's effective for Hawthorn and really limited the output.
Yeah, and I think the other one as well, putting, you know, even though they didn't play on each other the whole time, putting the two Hill boys on each other was also a quite a good move, like good move, and, you know, and I think Stephen, you could definitely say, had the winning edge over his brother in that one. But yeah, no, I thought it was, as you said, it was a terrific team performance overall. And, you know, the Hawks had their moments in the first quarter, but, I mean, they would certainly go away from the game thinking they could certainly play a hell of a lot better than that. But it was just pleasing for us to put it's close to a four-quarter performance. I think the first quarter was still not terrific, but at least the last three quarters were very, very solid. And I think Ross Lyon would certainly be happy doing the review on Monday after that game. And certainly keeps us in the hunt for the top four, which is the important thing.
I suppose it's the accuracy that one that helped us. You know, we kicked 3-0 at the start and we finished with 17-8. But just thank God it wasn't 8-17. So, yeah, it's just good to see that finally it can so easily go the other way, though, that we were quite good with the execution type of things, and it can so easily go the other way. And that might be the difference this weekend on how we take on Brisbane.
Yeah, I think the other thing as well, and it was interesting, McAvoy talked about it during the week, was the fact that the boys came out with a much more attacking mindset. And I think that resulted in getting shots at goal, Seppo, within probably the sort of, you know, middle of the ground rather than being in the deep in the pockets. And that's probably why we did kick a little bit straighter. But I thought the ability to move the ball, and, you know, we kicked three goals coast to coast, and which we really haven't seen that much, apart from maybe that, as you said, that first game against Collingwood where we had a couple. But it's sort of been very, very sporadic since then. But I thought it, I thought there was a lot of positive signs, and you know, just seemed to click very well. And it'll be interesting to see how we, as you said, we go against Brisbane this week with the, you know, with the pressure on us to see how we perform.
It seems like we're actually better at accurate goal kicking when it's on the run, and once the players actually stop and think about it and take the set shots. I'd just love to see the analysis and the numbers on how well we go, because, you know, Fife was nailing all those shots on the run, yet you put him on a set shot and it might be tight angle or straight in front, that they seem to, obviously, you know, even just thinking back to the Geelong game where, you know, Mundy's missed and Pav's missed, yet all these one that we've had on the run and the way that Walters and Fife and even, you know, Pav, all these little crumbing and snap goals out of packs and something that Lachie Neale does all the time, seem to be great at it. And even just speaking of goals and how good Crozier was with that tackle on Burgoyne and then just that little banana, a little outside of the foot shot and how he fired up to the crowd, I think that was one that really got the momentum growing. It's great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, obviously, any other points you want to bring up, Seppo, before we sort of move on from that game at all?
No, I think it's well covered it off, and it's yeah, just great to win. You know, psychology of just getting one up on the Hawks, not going to, into the final series, knowing that we it's a fair probable chance we might face them at some point, knowing that we've got the win over them.
Absolutely, and the other sort of result for I suppose for the Freo seconds playing Peel Thunders played against West Perth on Saturday and went down in the end 8 goals 11-59 to 9 goals 14-68. I suppose it was probably a little bit interesting that the Peel Thunder decided to leave De Boer on the bench for the whole first quarter and just sort of sat there. And if you get a chance, the quarter-time interview with Rod Willett was quite interesting, and Shepherd, you could see, was getting quite agitated with it. So there's still obviously a few teething problems, I think, between Peel Thunder and Fremantle in terms of what Peel wants to do and probably what Fremantle want them to do, because it was just, it seemed a very strange decision to leave De Boer on the bench for an entire quarter.
I don't know if he has managed, obviously he was there with Subin at the ground and weren't fully held over, but it was just interesting, the decision why it was. And he only got, what, 12 disposals for the game, and obviously, it's probably not the best if he's going to come back into the side, that you want a performance that, you know, shows and getting good kilometres into the leg. So hopefully it was enough, because he has been named as an inclusion this week. But, yeah, it's just interesting that it was limited game time.
Yeah, the other probably positive, or there's probably a couple of positives out of it, but I thought Apness, however you want to pronounce it, was very good again down forward, and his contested marking, I think, with another season under his under the gym there, Seppo, I think he's going to end up being a very, very good tall forward for us. And I think and the good thing is that probably him and Tabiner are quite different players, where you know, Tabiner tends to lead more up the ground, where Apness will be that more one-on-one contested mark in the goal square or, you know, inside 50. So with a little bit more conditioning, I think he's going to end up being a really, really good forward for us. The other interesting one, I suppose, which we'll move into, is Morabito once again played pretty well with 6 inside 50s and 26 touches, but wasn't enough to get a call up this week with the team change or the changes. And I think most people would have thought he might have at least made the squad of 25. But this week we've got obviously Fife out with a the suspension, and Barlow with a broken thumb, which was probably compounded the suspension a little bit further, particularly for Fremantle supporters, with having both our two of our sort of starting engine out of the side. But coming into the side is Ballantyne back, which is also a great thing for us. And then Subin, Matt De Boer, Ibbotson and Jack Hanneth comes into the 25. And it's also Daniel Pearce's 200th game, Seppo, which is, I don't think he's missed too many since he's come over for us. So
no, he has not missed once, actually. He's, I think he's played 61 or 62 consecutive games in the row, some of them obviously at Port before we come across, but he's, I think, one of the only players in the last 2 years, or him and I think Crowley, that hasn't missed a game. Even, you know, we've rested players many a time. It just shows how durable he is and the fact that he's racked up these games. A lot of people call for him to be chopped, but the selection committee have keep on putting him out there, and he's racking up 200, which is a big milestone because there's not too many other Freo players on the list. I think you talk about the big four of Sandy, Pav, Mundy, McFarlane. They've really got to the 200. So he's amongst the elite there, young Daniel. So great to see that he's getting to that mark.
All right, and do you want to do the ins and outs, Seppo, for the Lions?
Yeah, so we're looking at out for them is West Australian Marco Paparone, and in for them comes the retiring Ashley McGrath. You've got Nick Robertson, Ryan Lester, and Zach O'Brien. So it's I suppose when you're looking, I think the Lions have a massive injury list, and they're obviously the selections they're forced to pick who obviously is there and available, and they're obviously going to have three to be admitted from their extended bench there. It's just quite interesting that they've actually put Rockliffe all the way down there. It's listed second last. So that would be a great result for us if he was an out, but surely he'll play. And they do have some other younger types there that can trouble us. And even though we did smack him earlier in the year, what did we have? Round 14, 105 to 22 was a big result. And I remember we talking about earlier in the year how the younger players like Lewis Taylor and Josh Green and their smaller types always seem to bob up and cause us trouble. But I think in that game, there was players like Spur and Sutcliffe and some others just had fantastic games. So it's interesting to see the makeup of their side, and they're obviously missing a lot of players to injury. But they still have a fairly decent side, and you just look at what they did to Collingwood last week. That was more a down on Collingwood, but Brisbane do have an okay side, probably not as bad as what St Kilda and Melbourne are at the moment.
Yeah, it seems that every time we play one of these sides away, Seppo, someone's either retiring, having a farewell game, or something similar. We had the one with Lenny, and then I think there's one earlier in the year as well, which I think we struggled a little bit with. But I think I think Lepich has done a pretty good job with this side, to be honest. And there's obviously a lot of young players in there, but they seem to show quite a bit of promise. And obviously, like young Freeman last week kicked four goals against the Pies, and he was one of the academy players that Eddie's been bleeding about. So, but I think, some of those younger players, as you mentioned earlier, Lewis Taylor, who'll certainly be one of the candidates for the Rising Star Award, which is terrific for him. It'll be interesting to see again if Ryan Crowley does go to Pierce Hanley. He did a terrific job on him in the game early this year in the wet, where they sort of kept Brisbane to a point in the first half. But it'll be interesting to see if they decide to go that way again with Hanley, or whether he does decide to go to Rockcliffe, and who's obviously been their other major sort of winner. But even the last game we played, I think he still had nearly 40 touches and didn't have a huge influence on his own. I mean, generally, Hanley and Zorko are the other two that are sort of, if they're up and about, they sort of tend to give the other boys a bit of confidence. So you'd think he would stick with Hanley to start with, particularly after the last time we played him.
Yeah, definitely. I see that. And that was a fantastic move, and one that I didn't see coming, but obviously they've recognised. And I think after Crowley went to Hanley, over the next course of a couple of rounds, the effective sides have actually sent a hard tag to Hanley to limit him, and he does cut up. If you give him too much space, he's one that really racks it up and can be damaging. He's like the equivalent of our Hill, that if you let him go, he'll cut you up. So, well, looking back on our extended interchange, who do you reckon we're going to lose out of those?
Well, you'd have to think Hannah would be the obvious omission straight away.
I've got Ibbotson, Duffy, and maybe one of...
Well, Hill and Neil will definitely be inclusion. They'll be in.
Yep.
So you'd have to think it really comes down to the others now. Duffy didn't play. He only played about 10 minutes last week. So, and I know we talked there's been quite a bit of discussion about having the four forwards with Ballantyne, Walters, Crozier and Duffy. But even though they're not both, Crozier and Duffy aren't that small, but I'd be surprised if they play both of them. Particularly, you'd have to think that they would go with Subin just because he's going to give you that bit of extra grunt in the middle. Him or De Boer would be one. I mean, the back six looks pretty steady, so I'm not sure Ibbotson will get a game straight away either. What do you think?
Oh, that is a good point about Ibbotson, that they've not settled down the back six, but one thing I've noticed is they've actually named Sutcliffe on the wing now, so they're pushing him up, and obviously it's Daniel Pearce down at half back, but I think it's great that they're now, I reckon, ultimately Sutcliffe is a good midfielder, and I reckon we're still going to recruit for another player to play the smaller defender or your rebounder. But I think Ibbotson does, he's almost there, I reckon, as the contingency to Johnson, who has been struggling. So maybe if Johnson's fit, they're happy with the back six, and it'll be Hannith, Ibbotson, and one other, probably Duffy, to miss from that extended interchange. And we're looking at Subin, De Boer, Killie and Lachie Neal, which is a greater mix of midfielders to cover who were actually missing out of the side with Barlow and Fife, with obviously Ballantyne coming back into the side.
Well, that's it. I mean, I think the important thing we've got to look at is as well, and I'm, you know, Silvani did a pretty good stopping job last week, but he's not a terrific kick out of defence. And Zach Dawson generally knows his limitations and doesn't play above that, but you don't want to have too many guys down there who are struggling to pinpoint the ball out of defence. And I know that's why they like Sutcliffe running off half back there. I mean, Spurs been okay, but he's not, you know, once again, he's not, you know, wouldn't call him a terrific user of the ball. I mean, Duffield's obviously probably our best, well, probably one of arguably our better users along with Sutcliffe and Johnson. But as I said, Johnson's been struggling a bit. So it'll be interesting to see how they used it down there as well. They've obviously got quite a big side there with Daniel Merritt, Close and Freeman. So they've got a pretty reasonable height in the back line there. So it'll be interesting to see if they try and stretch Fremantle's defence with Dawson, Johnson and also Silvani there. Because even last week, there was a couple of times where Fremantle sort of didn't go with their usual loose man in defence, Seppo. They decided to just play man-on-man across the field, which is something you don't see often from a Ross Lyon side.
I think the only areas that Hawthorn really caught us out is when the resting ruckman, I think it was Hale, he sort of streamed out of the 50, and it's like we've been letting them go. When the taller forward or the resting ruckman decides to run out, it'll be either Dawson or Silvani. They almost let them go. When they're sort of running out of the 50, they'll let them have that, you know, set shot on mark further out. So that's where, you know, Dawson and Silvani get stretched when the key forward starts to lead out too far. But I think I'm quite happy the way that Silvani came into the side. It was almost a seamless replacement for McFarlane. That's why I think we're almost better suited, and this is nice coverage, or, you know, the transition period to get him in there, getting some games, that, you know, this is going to be life after McFarlane soon. And I think Silvani's doing a great job because he can certainly run with the guys, but hopefully they don't expose him and throw too many of those taller guys. Like, I haven't actually seen your Freeman and Close and Merritt, or, well, I've seen Merritt before, but I haven't really paid attention to how big and how they go on the contested ball on the forward line. So it'll be quite interesting how that back six copes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it'll certainly be interesting, you know, with the other side. Obviously, we did sort of briefly touched on it earlier, was about, and he's obviously not making the side today, Seppo, but I would have thought that they may have considered Morabito a little bit for this one. Because he would have, you know, just having that extra bigger body, and his form in the waffle has been pretty reasonable. And, you know, obviously his fitness is still probably not ideal, but he could have probably played a couple of quarters and then come in as a sub, or come off as a sub and had someone like, if you're going to run someone like Duffy in that role and give him a little bit extra game time to see what he's got. So, but...
you almost see that the way they extended Morabito's contract by a year. It's almost, you know, you're done for the year, get your body right again, hit the summer well. We're not going to stretch you, but it's almost like they've rewarded him by that contract extension. But like they did at the end of last year, where they gave him another year and said, get your body right. We're almost doing it again, but maybe still keeping the options open. But it's great to see that we've got guys like Subin and De Boer coming back in that have been playing all year and probably have a better fitness space and that knowledge of the inside mid-game that we need, with Fife and Barlow not there.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, absolutely. So it'll be interesting to see how they end up doing it at the end of the day. Obviously, Fremantle going reasonably comfortable favourites for this one, Seppo at $1.25 and Brisbane at $4. And the line obviously is sitting around about 30.5. So it'll certainly be a tough test for Freo, and I think, you know, they'll certainly be, between this game and the game next week when they play Port Adelaide, who like to run a lot, they'll certainly give their they'll certainly be pushing the kilometres out, I think, with this game. But you just have to look at the sides and you think that Brisbane's just going to have too many young, inexperienced bodies against the sort of more seasoned Fremantle players. I mean, I think their top four or five will probably be more than competitive, but I think it's going to be that bottom six or seven players that they'll struggle to contain against Freo, who goes pretty deep, really, when you look at their entire 22.
Mm. Yeah, I suppose that we've got nice coverage there, but I think of how important Fife and Barlow are, and I think about the last time that they were out of the side was that, well, the disaster of a game against Hawthorn, I think back in round three at the G, where they just tore apart us out of the middle, and there was guys in there trying to, Mundy was getting tagged, and Hill and Subin and De Boer, I think, were trying to do the job in the middle, that I just don't hope that Brisbane can dominate the centre without our two big guys in there, that we can get the job done. And like you said, it might be a long slog and us taking it out in the last again, but it's just interesting in terms of the weather. It's going to be a couple of showers up at the Gabba and clearing, so it is a 110 start over east there. Let's just hope that the weather conditions suit us and it's not making it really hard for us to kick a winning score, because that's certainly one thing we want to do. And you never know, percentage could come down to it in the end of the season. In terms of even just us, you know, Hawthorn could drop a game and all of a sudden we could be looking at playing a different opponent. It might not be Sydney, it might be, you know, Hawthorn or possibly Geelong, you know, depending on the other results go away. So we just got to keep on knocking it away. And I know most people have said, you know, you can't write this off as a nice percentage booster, because we can just, you know, look back at that St Kilda game and let's hope that's all done and dusted and we just not only get the 4 points here, but we get a decent result.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a huge amount of difference, but I mean, I don't think, as you said, Fremantle can make up 10% on Hawthorn within the last, unless Geelong come out and absolutely slaughter them this weekend and we managed to have a day out against Brisbane. But, I mean, it's just hard to tell with Brisbane as well. You just don't know which side. Like, is it the side that's going to come up that lost to 105 points to Adelaide, or is it the side last week? And, I mean, granted, Collingwood had a lot of outs or injuries and stuff, but they were still playing pretty well early in the game when Collingwood had their side out there, and they looked like they were going to win it anyway. And they ended up winning comfortably by 67. So you just don't know which one it's going to be. But I don't think you're going to see a repeat of what happened in the St Kilda game, that's for sure. And I think all the boys know that it'll certainly be a crucial result for us in the overall standings. And I think a lot will depend upon as well what happens Friday night with the Port Adelaide-Carlton game.
I think Carlton are every chance to get up as well. Like, I don't know, haven't really looked at the named Port side, but I think Carlton, the way that they're going, have every chance of, you know, getting close to us and Carlton over the last couple of weeks, that they could easily knock off Port, especially if Port are struggling to keep their fitness up. And I think they've lost Trengrove. I'm not sure if he's back now.
No, he's back this week. Him and Monfries are back this week. So it will be a couple of decent ins for them. And and they lose Young and Logan. So, I mean, they're definitely going to be stronger. But Carlton have actually looked pretty good the last probably month or so, last 5-6 weeks. So it'll be certainly a tough game, that's for sure. And
certainly takes a bit of pressure off us if Carlton do manage to beat Port and just keep that game buffer. It's going to be nice going into that last game, just knowing that we've got a bit of comfort. So it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And any other points you want to bring up on this game, Seppo, before we...
No, other than the fact that I'm going to be flying up there Sunday and I'm taking up my Kepler Brodie banner with me and giving him a good chant out there, even though he's not playing. And hopefully the weather holds us for us to get the big banner for Daniel Pearce out there, that he's going to just run around, because he's a superstitious type that doesn't run through the banner. So we're going to have a nice big 200-game banner for him, and he's just going to run around the side of it. But I just hope that it's a very good game. I just can't, you know, don't want any more injuries or suspensions from this. It'd just be the worst time of the year or worst thing to happen, touch wood. And I'm looking forward to it. So if any of the fans are in Melbourne that are not going up to the game, get down to the Great Northern Hotel to watch it. I'll be back there to watch probably the game the week after. And I just hope we get a good result.
Yeah, I think the other interesting thing before we head off, Seppo, is that... you know, obviously, it's probably remiss of us not to mention Lachie Neal, who got mentioned in the 40 for the under-22 player of the year. But it'd be interesting to see that. I think he was our only nomination for that award. And I know we've got Crozier in this week who does fit that criteria as well. But interestingly, I think Brisbane have probably 12 or 13 players playing this week who are under-22. So it'll certainly be an interesting... to see how those younger bodies go against, as you said, the more seasoned bodies. They're certainly going to run and play on at all costs if they can. But
it takes a toll, I think. Once you get towards the end of the season, you've got younger bodies, they're less likely to pop up and cause cause damage over the four quarters. So let's just hope that our senior experienced bodies, the over 22s, get the job done.
I think they will. I think they'll come out early really hard and just try and sort of take any wind out of Brisbane in the first quarter. I mean, I know our first quarters haven't been great this year, but I think they're going to probably try and come out and do as much as they can to, try and sort of give them no chance of getting any momentum or giving them a bit of a sniff. So we'll see what happens. So what do you think the result will be, Seppo?
I'm going to tip a conservative 28-point win to Fremantle.
All right. I think based on what we've seen in the past three encounters, I think Fremantle will obviously be too strong. And I feel that they'll probably be at least a two-goal side better in each quarter. So using that logic, you're looking at eight-goal win. So I'll go for the even 50 this week, and hopefully that'll be enough of a buffer for us to cement, even if we do manage to get enough of a win that we can, even if we lost the following week but got within a certain number of points, it will give us a bit of a buffer zone for that fourth spot. But I feel confident in even beating Port the week after, but we'll see. There's plenty of water to go under the bridge till then.
That's it. All right, no worries.
All right, thanks again for joining us again this week, Seppo, and as I said, hopefully you'll enjoy the trip up there in nice, warmer Brisbane than the cold of Melbourne.
I'm looking forward to 22 degrees. It's a lot warmer than what it has been in Melbourne, so that's exciting.
All right, no worries. And we'll thanks for joining us again this week, guys, and we'll speak to you next week. That's it for now. Bye for now.